All of the government programs that we don't like are funded by theft. All of the government programs that we do like... Oh, sorry, there aren't any. Government is the reason that healthcare is expensive. Government is the reason you can't go to college. Taxation is theft.
And welcome back to Taxation is Theft. The show that talks about all the ways the government is ripping you off and screwing you. Broadcasting live on Facebook and YouTube from an underground bunker deep within the jungles of Mexico. I'm Dan Taxation is Theft Berman, former candidate for President of the United States, currently in the race for Governor of Texas. And today I have a very special guest, Vicki Rose. She's an advocate for Kratom and a candidate for the Mississippi House of Representatives. And there's a real tragic story that coincides with this. We're going to talk about her campaign, but unfortunately, she lives across the street from the police station. That's not the unfortunate part. The police know her, they know her family, and they know her dog. But one day when her dog got out, got loose, a cop came out and shot it in the face right in front of her kids. The pup survived, but there will be no consequences for the cops, of course. Luckily, the pup survived, but that's not always the case. But we'll talk about that and the situation and what's going to happen with that. Before we get started, of course, I want to take a quick minute to ask for your support. Head on over to taxationistheft.cards, get one of these really awesome hats, get yourself a Taxation is Theft flag, or any of our t-shirts or mugs or any of the cool stuff we have in the store. All of that stuff goes to support our efforts. It helps to let the world know that taxation is theft. That's right. We have support from around the world. We have people in Uganda, in Australia, in Sweden, in Spain, in Hong Kong, everywhere saying taxation is theft because of the work that we're doing here. So help us keep that alive. Help us reach even more people by buying something from our store. We're not going to ask you to just throw money at us because we want to give you something in return. And now, on to the show. Vicki, welcome. How's it going?
It's going really, really well. I'm exhausted, but I'm doing really well.
Awesome. So, well, let's tell everybody why you're exhausted and why you're coming to us live from inside of your car.
Well, you can see it right here, Vicki Rose, state representative. I'm running in a special election, so the race is maybe, well, it is. It's 7 weeks long. Election day is 5 days from today. So we're out knocking on doors. I think I have about 15 people lined up to knock on Saturday, Sunday, Monday also. And I can't wait for Tuesday.
Yeah, and so until just a few minutes ago, I actually thought your election was going to be in November, but you're actually, this is a special election. So what's the story with that?
I ran for the seat in 2019. I think it was even on your show when I ran for that seat last year. And Gary Chisholm is the gentleman who resigned. He held the seat for 21 years, and he wasn't doing well with health-wise. And I don't know if his wife, the newspaper said that something happened with his wife while he was in the legislature. And he decided he needed to resign because of that, and he needed to stay home to help her. So in June, he resigned. State law says that the governor has to appoint a special election. The governor does not appoint new representatives. The voters get to vote for them. This is a nonpartisan race. So all of us are on the ballot as independents. The other two individuals I'm running against have said that they will, if one of them wins, they will claim Republican. The Republican Party label, and obviously I'm going to choose the Libertarian Party label when I win, and I'm going to win because I have outraised two Republican Party candidates three times more than what they have raised, and I'm still bringing in money here and there. And in fact, today Tom Arnold, the Libertarian Party of Tennessee, put out the challenge. He said, anybody contributes money toward my campaign today, he will match it dollar for dollar up to $1,000. I still
amazing.
Have to feed mine. Right. We're still feeding our volunteers, and I have two meet and greets I gotta pay for this week.
That's awesome. Your signal's getting a little bit choppy, but I just to repeat for what everybody for what you just said, So she's outraised three times what two Republican candidates have raised. And we have a very well-known libertarian donor who's willing to match dollar for dollar up to $1,000 anything that anyone wants to donate today. So if somebody wants to donate today, every dollar you donate means Vicky gets two. Where could somebody go donate?
So any American citizen can contribute at vote for FOR Vicky, .com. And there are no caps on contributions. And if you want to look up my Finally Be, you can go to the Mississippi Secretary of State's website, Campaign Finance, and type in Rose, and you can look that up for yourself to validate what I have said.
Awesome. And so I know there's a lot of hesitation from people like, oh, libertarians don't win elections. Why would I want to help you out? I'm looking at the statistics on, or like, you know, the history here. In the last election against an incumbent, you got 21.8%, almost 22%. And this was a Republican. And now you've got two Republicans who are going to split those votes in half, most likely, who aren't raising a whole lot of money, who neither are an incumbent. You have a very good chance looking at this right now.
So when we're knocking on doors, we're hearing a lot of, I voted for her last time, I'm going to vote for her again. And that's important because this is a special election. We are not expecting more than 3,000 people to show up to vote for this race. I got over 1,600 votes in the last election. I need 50 plus 1% of the vote in order to outwin without going to a runoff.
Right. And that if those same 1,600, it says 1,652 right here. If those same, if even 1,600 show up and only 3,000 show up total, that would get you the win right there. And this is just so like, in the general election in 7,500 people showed up. But here's the thing. This is a general election, and for special elections, this is like when everybody's out voting anyway, because there's a big election going on. There's 10 different races and all these other things. We see the same thing for presidential years to non-presidential years. Fewer people show up. For special elections, even fewer than that show up. And so this is really interesting because for libertarians, our vote count doesn't always go down like the regular vote turnout, because a lot of the people who are voting for libertarians are people who actually know the candidate and they're coming out to support the candidate. So this is really an amazing opportunity. And I, for anybody who's thinking like, hey, I've got a few bucks and I want to help a libertarian get into office, I think this is an extremely good race to bet your money on. These are really good odds here.
Well, I love how you use the language, because so far my largest contributor is Bill Perkins. You can see that on my filing report, and he's a professional poker player. So if a professional poker player who has won over $5 million playing poker, can look at my race and bet on me, I think you can too.
Yeah, that's really amazing. So let's talk about what happened with your dog, because I'm a dog lover, and this really pissed me off when I heard about it. And I know you don't want to tell too much about it because you don't know. Well, I'll let you say why, because I don't know how much I'm allowed to say or not say about it. So I'll let you do the explaining.
I don't even really know how much I'm allowed to say, so I'm just going to say what I feel like saying. My dog got out, and I live in town of West Point. We're a town of about 12 to 13,000 people. I live right across the street. My front window looks out at the backside of the police station. My kids were riding their bikes next door to the police station in the parking lot for the school district office, which they do when there's no cars over there. And, you know, it's easy to keep an eye on them, just riding around the circles. The dog is a heeler, half heeler, half pointer. By nature, an Australian or a blue shepherd, a blue heeler, will protect the herd or their people. There is an officer who is walking to the back of the building. He's actually an investigator. He only had his gun on him because he's an investigator. He had no mace. He didn't have a taser. And he was looking down at his telephone. So he didn't see the dog come. And the dog runs around in front of my kids and starts barking at the police officer. The officer in his report, or the officer was asked, because the sheriff's department did its own investigation, asked, did you not feel like you could kick the dog? Or, you know, push it out of the way. I thought I would get bit. So that night when it happened at about 4:15. I ran over to the city hall meeting, which happened at 5:30, because I knew that the police chief was going to be there. He's there at every city hall meeting. And I pulled Avery Cook aside and I asked him about what happened. And I asked him, what's your protocol when it comes to dogs? And he said, actually, it's up to the discretion of the officer and what they feel most comfortable with. If they feel like they are threatened, then it's up to their discretion. Well, this investigator felt threatened. The dog was barking at him. He tried to walk away two or three times. He tried to come back. I mean, all he did was take two or three steps. The dog wasn't lunging at him, but he felt like he couldn't get to his police car. Now, the dog catcher was inside of the police building of the station that when this happened. City code says an officer is supposed to call if there is an animal loose. They're supposed to call the dog catcher, and he didn't do that. They get fined $50 if they don't do it. I don't even know if he's been fined. When it happened, there was a lot of outrage online and people very upset about it. And I can understand, you know, and especially with people who are animal lovers and with the trigger happy nature of some individuals, not even probably the majority, but we get a lot of attention for it, right? I can understand the frustration and people being wanting to see his head roll or see him fired. But I went on social media and said, guys, we don't know the background of the police officer or what filters he's operating through and why he might have chosen to do that. Let's err on the side of innocent or proven guilty. Let's stop slaughtering people. We're based on a system of innocent until proven guilty. And it helped a lot of people calm down just by me saying that, because I'm like, you know, this was my dog. I hope that you can respect this and approach it that way. And I still feel the same way about that. But our sheriff's department has more training. The sheriff deputies are out in the county a whole lot more than the police officers, and they encounter animals a lot more frequently. And that likely would not have happened if it would have been a sheriff's deputy from our county instead of the police officer in town or the investigator. The dog was shot in the nose, and it went through his nose. It lodged in his throat. Bullet fragments did. Part of it went out the bottom. His tongue was blown out, and it hit part of his foot, and was able to get him to the vet. And I saw her working on the dog, and my 12-year-old was with me. I had 8 kids, so Michael was with me. I didn't want to bring all of them. And I needed help with the dog, of course. She lost him on the table. I saw her doing chest compressions and whatnot, and throw her hands up, and I'm like, he's such a good dog. He's just like, you know what, 16, 17, 18 months old, 37-pound dog. And healers nip. And he might have maybe bit his wrist or something to get him to go away. And I just kept telling the puppy how good he was and how he didn't deserve it. And we were crying. And everybody, they had pulled all of the stuff out of him. And I started talking to our vet, and I said, so what do we do about the disposal of the body? And we just started talking about that. And I saw it out of the corner of my eye, and I wasn't I didn't register. And the vet tech said, oh my gosh, he just took a breath. And I said, he did, you're right. It's like, I saw his chest move up. No one was touching him. She had declared him dead like almost 5 minutes prior to this. Wow. And nobody was touching him. And he came back to life. And so then when he couldn't eat because he was in pain and he couldn't take pain medicine, and we had to bring him back to the vet so they could give him IVs for pain meds, she finally did pull a very large portion of the bullet out of his throat. And then within hours, he was eating. But when people were seeing the hard time having, they were like, well, why don't you just put it on? I said, this dog came back to life by itself. He's not, I am not deciding for him if he is going to live or die. He can decide for himself. But the next day, my 10-year-old came to me and he was crying and he said, I don't want to be a police officer anymore because they shot Buster. And I said, you know what? If you want to be a police officer or a private security person or whatever, you can be one of the good ones. You can be the one of the ones who has self-control and who helps people. So today he's talking about being a scientist, though.
Wow, that's really amazing. And I'm glad he made it out of that. That's an amazing story. But you know, to your point, I think it's really amazing that you came out and said that you appreciating the fact that you don't know who this officer is or what his background is and what filter he's seeing the world through. That's really awesome. But at the same time, I think there's, you know, there might have been some, maybe he had PTSD or maybe he had some traumatic experience where he was absolutely fearful of even the smallest dogs. But I think that speaks to a point that type of person probably should not be hired as a police officer. And I think, you know, it's like, you know, you could have like maybe a completely rational reason as to why you decided to shoot another human being. Maybe you've got PTSD from being in Iraq or Afghanistan. And a lot of people feel the same way, that those people should not be police officers for that reason, because they're going to get into situations where they're carrying a gun and they might feel inclined to use it without that self-control or that self-restraint in a situation that it might be a little bit more tense than just, you know, walk through the park, but it's, you know, something that's out of the ordinary that might trigger something. I think that is still, yeah,
it's such a gray area, because that's a lot that went through my head when it happened. You know, my response went to, there were kids nearby. Well, he didn't know there were kids nearby. Okay. And also in my head, I went, because he was looking down at his phone and the kids were separated between him and a shed that's in the back parking lot. But also in my head, I went to that space where, if he is so quick to pull the trigger to shoot my dog, what about if it was a human in a situation? My 17-year-old daughter has Bartonella disease, cat scratch fever. Not cat scratch either, but it's from cat scratches. And part of that is she has schizophrenia and she hallucinates. And I get scared because I have heard stories of officers not knowing how to treat those types of situations with people who are hallucinating and pulling out a weapon and shooting them, you know, because someone has mental health and they can't. It is such a gray area of how to respond with this and how to treat this. But even with the police officers and shooting dogs, when the sheriff told my husband, he said, no, this doesn't happen in our sheriff's department. But he said, most dog shootings happen for law enforcement officers. That is a fact. And he said that doesn't really happen in his police. This doesn't really happen in his department. they're well trained there. But when someone gets a warrant to go to a house, in a lot of sheriff's departments across the country, if there is a dog in the property, they will just see the dog and just bam, shoot it. Threat or no threat. They have a warrant to go in the house, they see the dog, bam, they shoot it.
Yeah. And that's just...
what do you do? What is the right answer?
Yeah, and that's absolutely insane because, like, so many houses have dogs in them that, like, when you're going to serve a warrant, that can't be standard operating procedure. That's just insane. We can't have that. This is supposedly a civilized society that all of our taxes are paying for, and that's just absolutely insane. And I mean, I can understand there's a murderer in the house. We have to get into the house and there's this crazy pit bull that's barking at us and trying to, you know, chew our arms off. But that's like such a minority of the cases. Like they've shot these little chihuahuas, dogs that aren't barking, dogs that aren't charging, dogs that are running away. It's like they've been given this license to do whatever they want. And that is, I mean, you look at us, right? We have we are petrified of the consequences of our actions, right? Like, don't speed, right? Like, make sure, like, you drive past a cop, make sure you got your seatbelt on because there's going to be consequences for that. And when they shoot dogs, or when they shoot people, there are no real consequences. And so I can see how a lot of police officers they won't think twice. Because that's just such a foreign concept of I better think about this because I might be punished for it. Because that hardly ever happens. I think that's one of the biggest issues here. But okay, I don't want to dwell on this too much because it is a sad thing. I'm really happy to hear that he made it and. And he's gonna be okay, it sounds like.
He's definitely traumatized. My kid's still traumatized from it. It's something that will, you know, be with them. My neighbor kid, the girl who was sitting on the front porch next door, she saw it happen. She literally saw the officer shoot the dog. All the kids being traumatized is gonna be her. The rest of us, I mean, I'm in the house. I'm in the back of the house. And I didn't hear anything. My 10-year-old runs to me and says, Mom, Joel got shot. My 6-year-old. He was in the house when it happened. And all he knew was he heard a pop, which he thought at first was firecracker. And that, because that happens frequently. And then he saw my 6-year-old running to the house screaming and crying. And I ran out the front door, and he said, oh, no, the dog. And I turn around, and I look, and there's my dog laying underneath the coffee table. My house looked like a murder scene. Laying underneath the coffee table, blood pouring out of his face, and just laying there. And I'm just like, what to do? And I yell, my husband's like, what's going on? And I yell, the police shot the dog. And he, you know, he has a hard time with that dog at times. You know, he's like a love-hate relationship, but... he ran across the street and he's like, who is he? Where is he? Well, we thought it was, you know, the appearance. And this is another really sad thing is we don't have a PR person within our police department. We really need one because we did not know that it was standard protocol that every time a firearm is discharged, they immediately have to go and file a report. Well, he didn't have his radio with them, so we couldn't do it. So he went into the building to file a report and follow a protocol. It had the appearance of, let's circle the wagon to protect our own. Because my husband ran out there saying, where is he? I want to talk to him. I want to find out what happened. Why in the world did you do this? How dare you do this? And we couldn't even talk to the guy. They wouldn't even tell us more. So it's like, you're protecting your own people. And that doesn't do anything for the person who's operating on emotion and fear of the unknown. And then the entire community, you know, hearing about it. of course, it went viral, you know, on social media, and everybody's talking about it. Now, I'm not going to go to West Point, and there, you know, a lot of people, you know, know who I am because of my activism, but then sometimes, you know, the latest one was me posting video of one of my neighbors in underwear on her face in response to the mask mandate. But all I have to say, I'm the one who's, you know, the police officer shot the dog. That was you? Yeah, you know, so they all go into conversation every now and then. I don't use it a lot, but, you know, it seems like it's something to interact with somebody so you can connect with me and have, you know who I am in the community. So, but everybody knew about it, and it was not a smart move for the police department to just kind of ignore it and go away.
And that's like their standard operating procedure, though, which is unfortunate, because as much as, I mean, they know this, right? I mean, they're involved with the law, they enforce the law. They know, don't say anything until there's an official statement, while at the same time, they're trying to trick everybody that, you know, they have an encounter with to, you know, answer as many questions as they possibly can without the presence of a lawyer, without being under arrest, you know, to collect all this information on us, while at the same time, they know themselves they're not supposed to say anything unless, like, it's been cleared by, you know, the chain of command. Everybody's got their story straight and everything else. And I think that's really tragic because, you know, I get it. You know, sometimes somebody's going to say the wrong word and that's going to be used against them. But at the same time, they knowingly try to trick us into confessing to crimes in that same way that they keep their mouths shut. And it's really frustrating because even when they don't like even revealing officers' names, like especially while all these protests are going on, or even during traffic stops. I've seen people recording traffic stops and they ask the officer what's his name and he doesn't want to say his name. This is just like, and sometimes they'll point to their badge and say it's right here. And it's like, you could say your name. You don't have to be an asshole. You can just, like act like a human being. Act like you're trying to treat other people like human beings. And it's like they know that they need to put up the stone wall and they need to keep us from doing the same. And I really feel like that creates an incredibly strong division between us and them. They like to say like we're part of the community. There's no us and them, but that's what they're doing when they do that. I know it sucks.
Well, one of the things we need to remember is, you know, one of the keywords in my campaign is servant leadership. Yeah, that's one of the things that I bring to the community, is operating from a place of being a servant toward the people that I represent. Your dollars, you know. Taxation systems, but our taxpayer dollars are going to pay for these public servants to work for us, to watch out for us. And they are allowed to get away with things because of the nature of their position that they hold.
We're losing you.
If we were out somewhere and we felt threatened and we shot someone else's dog.
We're losing you. Can you try saying something now?
Can you hear me now?
Yeah. There we go. Okay.
There we go. If we were out somewhere and we felt threatened and we shot our neighbor's dog or something of that nature, you know, there would be help pay.
Right. Yeah, it's a different set of rules.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
That's right.
So let's talk more about your campaign.
Yeah.
What?
Okay. Go ahead. That's fine.
What did you want to say? Something else?
As long as the signal is good, I'm good to stay on. We're heading to another neighborhood. There's a cell tower right here. I think we would be okay. We were just in a rural area for a moment.
All right. I heard about half of that. If you are, do you need to get going to I know you're so I in case anybody missed it, you're out there knocking on doors as we speak. Well, I mean, you're taking a break right now, but you're out there knocking on doors to make sure you get these votes for the special election that's coming up next week. And a quick reminder for anybody that's listening, if you want to head over, what's the website?
Vote for FOR Vicky. I'd like to share here. Let's see here. Vicky.com. And don't forget that there is a match today only. Today only we have 5 days left, and we have door knockers to beat, and we have.
Vote for Vicky. We just lost you again. I'll fill everyone in. VoteForVicky.com. And if you go there, we have a pretty well-known libertarian donor who is going to match everything that you donate today only. So if you're watching this live, make sure you head over there right now and donate whatever you can. If it's 5 or 10, that's awesome. If it's 50 or 100, that's even more awesome. As a matter of fact, let's do this. I don't have a whole lot to donate. But I'll do this. Whatever you get today, I will match up to 250. So if you're listening right now, head over to voteforvicky.com and donate whatever you can. This is, you know, like we said, this is an amazing opportunity. This is a really great race. It's a special election. There's a very, very good chance that she could be the next representative libertarian in the Mississippi House of Representatives. So this is really awesome. Go donate what you can. So let's talk about, like, what are some of the do you have any specific issues that you're proposing policy changes or anything like that?
I'm not really talking about a whole lot of that on the campaign trail right now. It's our campaign strategy. Do you want me to go into it here on your show, though? If you can still hear me, okay?
Yeah, you can talk about that, or you can talk about what your strategy is. What are you talking to people when you go knock on their doors?
Well, the first thing we're doing when we're knocking on doors is we're mentioning, do you know there's a special election? The governor picked this really odd, weird date when he could have said it for November 3rd, when there's more people out at the polls. He did that for a special election seat for a state house seat that the man resigned in April. Okay. Gary resigned in June, and he says this for September 22nd. Republican governor, Republican district, you do the math, right? So we are letting people know that there's a special election where maybe there'll be a bigger voter turnout than they thought. But our messaging, you know, we're talking about the need for education reforms here in Mississippi. One size fits all is not the solution to the state. We still have Common Core here. We still have way too many tests. I know that Texas was testing insanely numbers of tests to their students. We still do that in Mississippi because we followed what Texas was doing. And you're probably familiar with that, but we need to end it. You know, I graduated with standards based on attendance, certain GPA level, and number of credits. Why isn't that good enough anymore? Why are we putting all these burdens on our kids? Healthcare, we still have certificate of need permission laws in Mississippi for our healthcare system. And during coronavirus pandemic, we're being told we don't have enough beds, we don't have enough respirators. Well, gee, I wonder why that is. These big hospitals running up everything in town because they're lobbying the governor and everybody to keep certificate of need. We've got, we have a lot of other issues in healthcare. Mississippi's 50th in everything pretty much in the country. We were just there was a report done, and it came out in the Clarion Ledger, the state's newspaper, on Sunday that said Mississippi is number 51 when it comes to health care.
I'm sorry, did 51. You say
51?
So, are you below Puerto Rico? Is that?
I guess so.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's nuts. And you know, this is something I talk about a lot with the certificate of needs. It's absolutely unnecessary, but it's the government saying, no, yeah, we're going to limit what's available, so you have less to choose from, so you're forced to pay more, and you're forced to get less quality. That's exactly. There is nothing, absolutely nothing good that comes out of certificate of need. That's nuts. I can't even believe that's a thing. But, I mean, well, I know how corrupt the system is. But yeah, it's absolutely nuts.
Well, Dan, I'm going to have to head here. We've only got another hour and 20 minutes to knock, and we would like to hit another 100 doors if we can on here. So I really appreciate this opportunity. And after I went on Tuesday, give me a call. I'd love to be back on your show.
All right. Sounds great. And you will be our first elected libertarian on the show, I think, at that point. Awesome. All right. Well, good luck with that.
Thanks again.
And I'll let you get running. I'm going to keep talking to everyone for a couple minutes. But good luck and good luck on Tuesday.
Thank you.
All right. I'll see you around. So I just want to remind everybody, this is, I've offered to match whatever she gets in donations today up to $250. We have another libertarian donor who's offering to match up to $1,000. So what that means is if you donate $10, she's going to get $30. If you donate $100, she's going to get $300. No, sorry. Yes, that's right. If you donate $100, she's going to get $300. So please go to voteforvicky.com. I don't want to say I don't donate to a lot of libertarian candidates, because I do, but this, I definitely don't donate that much. But this is something that absolutely, this is an amazing opportunity. I just want to repeat some of these statistics. 7,500 people showed up to vote in the last general election. This is a special election, so probably half that. Half that is going to be about 3,200 people. And she got 1,600 in her last election. Now, she's already got support, because this is the same race. She's already got the same supporters in the same district. And she's going door to door with a group of volunteers. She's knocking on every single door. She's going to have even more support. And these 1,600 that came out to vote for her the first time are, they're not people who just happened to be out voting that day and thought that they would vote libertarian. These are people who go out to vote for libertarians. These are people who are going to show up for the special elections. So this really is an amazing opportunity. The incumbent is gone. She lost to an incumbent last time. She still got 22% almost, which is really good for a libertarian. She got 22% against an incumbent, which is, this is people going to, you know, vote Republican. But not only that, this special election on Tuesday is nonpartisan. So that means people don't get to see what party these people are for, which means that anybody who does show up, I mean, first of all, the people who are straight party voters who don't know who's even running, they're probably not even going to show up. But nobody's going to show up and be able to say Republican, Republican, Republican down the list, because that's not an option. This is a nonpartisan election now. The two people that she is running against are Republicans. So anybody who is a Republican and is aware of the race and is aware of who these people are, they have two Republicans to choose from, which means their votes can be diluted. So, and she said that this race requires 50% plus one, which is interesting, because let's just say, for whatever happens, if she gets 30%, even if she gets 20%, which is, she got more than 20% last time, if she gets 20%, there's 80% left. If these two Republicans split that down the middle, neither one of them has 50%. So probably what's going to happen is they're going to eliminate the person at the bottom. If she gets 30%, maybe 35%, that would probably, it would do the same thing and it would probably put her in second place, which means the next person gets eliminated and they'd have another round of voting. A lot of people who don't show up for special elections, I'm guessing if they had to have another round of voting, would not show up again. If they're just voting for just another Republican. But, like I said, for the Libertarian candidate, they're probably more likely to show up again for that. So this is an amazing opportunity. Of course, this is all conjecture. I don't know what's going to actually happen. But I think that it's a really great scenario. The cards are stacked in her favor. I think this is really awesome. And that's why I volunteered to donate to match whatever you guys donate. So make sure you head over and donate. Yeah, this is awesome. I guess that's all I have to say about that. Anyway, guys, I'm not gonna hold you up rambling on and on and on again while my guest is gone. But I am kind of really excited about this. So we'll see what happens. Hopefully maybe I'll have an announcement for you next Tuesday or next Wednesday, I guess. So until next time, Taxation is Theft. Make sure if you're listening to this on the podcast, make sure to subscribe. If you're listening to this on YouTube or Facebook, make sure to like and share, comment, leave a comment, because that helps the algorithms. And I'm pretty sure we're shadow banned on just about every platform. So anytime you comment, everything you do to tag a friend, anything you do helps us get a little boost with the algorithms. So make sure you do that. And of course, head on over to taxationstheft.cards, get one of these really awesome hats, get a flag, get a t-shirt, all that stuff. It really goes to help supporting what we do. And I will see you next time. Taxation is Theft. This feels so weird not saying bye to my guest because they already left. I'll see you next time, guys.